We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode of Inside Golf Podcast is brought to you by The Rabbit Hole. This is the tool that I use to make all of my models. This is the tool that I use to get all of my info and data. And so if you want to build similar models, have access to what I'm doing, run your own numbers, you can head on over to betspurtsgolf.com, code INSIDEGOLF to get 25% off. It is crazy cheap with the Inside Golf code, $150 for the year, $15 for the month, and $5 for the week with that code. So obviously, we're getting into a massive part of the golf schedule. Masters is right around the corner. So for all of the info and data that I will be using for the first major of the year and that I will be talking about on the podcast this week when we talk a little Valero, betspurtsgolf.com can get you everything you need. Code INSIDEGOLF for a 25% off discount. That is the important part. Okay, we're going to talk a little Valero Texas Open today, maybe a little look ahead to the Masters. Some thoughts on Houston. You know, I've been on the road a lot. I didn't get to do a podcast last week because I was on a golf trip. This weekend, I'm at my girlfriend's parents' house in Napa in Northern California. I'm recording this one from her parents' guest house. But I did get to watch a fair amount of Houston this week. I watched a lot of golf on Thursday morning, and then I watched the majority of the leaders play almost their entire round on today, on Saturday. I'm recording this as always on Saturday evening. So I know Scottie Scheffler was kind of the hot button topic of the week, and whether he wins tomorrow in Houston, which I think we could probably all agree is highly likely, or whether he ends up finishing like T2 or T3, he's down to 4-1 to win the Masters. Maybe that even gets a little bit lower depending on what happens on Sunday tomorrow. And I pumped the brakes a little bit on the Scheffler discourse. I thought that it was getting a little bit out of hand in terms of the Tiger comparisons. I didn't think there was as much statistical merit or eye test merit to a lot of those comparisons that I was seeing. And I did not play any Scottie Scheffler this week in Daily Fantasy, 0%. And how that ends up working out to me, I think I'll probably find out a lot more tomorrow. I think my argument for against Scottie Scheffler at 50%+ ownership, at least in the contest that I was playing, higher ownership in some of the higher stake stuff and some single entry stuff. I know he certainly got above 60 in certain contests as well. And I think the issue that I had with it this week was largely golf course dependent, right? I was hearing a lot of reports on the grounds that this golf course was going to play dramatically differently than we have seen in years past for Memorial Park. Kobe was there all day on Wednesday for a practice round. We did a whole show on Wednesday night breaking down how this golf course was going to play quite different, how it was going to look quite different on television this year. And I think anybody that's watched any part of the Houston Open this week could see how different this golf course looks compared to if you look at what this golf course looked like on TV in years past. And a large reason for that was, I think that the PGA Tour, to its credit, has kind of, you know, I am pro doing something like this. I'm not totally sold on the idea that the golf course is necessarily more fun to watch without the gnarly Bermuda rough. But obviously, as you can see, they chopped down all of the rough. The golf course looks a lot cleaner on television. It looks a lot greener. And you get a lot of that Masters feel, right? Where there's no longer a penalty for missing off the tee, really, whatsoever. You see guys blow it all over the yard, and they have pretty fairly standard recovery shots out of rough that the ball sits completely up. It's overseeded rough, and it's very easy to recover on this golf course, which takes away a lot of the character of what this golf course is, right? In prior years with the Houston Open, before the overseed, this had some pretty gnarly, unpredictable Bermuda rough. And the fact that the golf course was so long, it made hitting the fairway or having a lot of distance pretty darn essential, right? Because you either needed to be playing out of the fairway or you needed to hit it far enough up there that you could take a short iron out of the rough. And therefore, you had a lower greens in regulation percentage, a lot of emphasis on around the green play. And this year, there is not that penalty for a missed fairway. You're going to get a little bit of a higher of a greens in regulation percentage. And therefore, it dramatically changes like the types of players that I was sort of interested in this week. I remember on the Wednesday show, I ran a model with the newer course conditions, the overseeded rough course conditions. And I kind of got in my head, I said to myself, man, this is all going to be about distance, long iron play, and putting, right? This is going to be almost in some ways like a Bermuda-esque Torrey Pines, where it's going to be how far can you hit the ball off the tee? Are your long irons strong? Because it's still a long golf course with a lot of longer par threes and a little bit of short game too, but a lot less emphasis on short game than we've seen in prior years, because again, you get the higher greens and regulation percentage, and you know, the green side surrounds are a lot more benign and easy to chip out of when you get that overseeded short grass. And in that model, that started giving me a lot more players. I did not play all of these guys, but like Stefan Jaeger raised in my estimation a lot. He's played very well at Torrey Pines. Thomas Dietrich, he played well at Torrey Pines. Taylor Moore, Alejandro Tosti, Tony Finau, those are all Torrey Pines guys. Nate Lashley, T3 at Torrey Pines. Cameron Champ, Kevin Daugherty, Cam Davis. These are all guys that hit the ball a long way. Kurt Kitayama as well. Those are all guys that hit the ball a long way. And a lot of them are pretty good putters as well. And so I said to myself, these course conditions, this extra emphasis on straight power and putting over around the green play, that's actually not good for Scottie Scheffler, right? Like, why has it been so easy for Scottie Scheffler to be able to separate himself at golf courses like Bay Hill and TPC Sawgrass? Well, because those are two of the golf courses on tour with the lowest greens in regulation percentage on tour and the highest missed fairway penalty on tour. And how does Scottie Scheffler separate himself from a very, very good golfer? By his long and straight driving, his great long iron play when other players are not able to hit greens, and his elite ability to scramble. He's got the best short game on the entire PGA Tour. And so these golf courses like TPC Sawgrass and particularly Bay Hill, those are very strategic golf courses where you can't just bomb and gouge it. There needs to be an element of accuracy off the tee as well. Both feature low greens in regulation percentages, and They're just perfect golf courses for Scotty to be able to separate himself. That doesn't mean that he can't win on an easy golf course where everybody's hitting greens, but it just makes his path a lot easier. And so I said to myself, gosh, given these course conditions, Scotty obviously should still be the favorite and is probably hands down the most likely to win this golf tournament. But to me, his path is a little bit more difficult than what it would have been under previous Memorial Park conditions. And I truly believe that that has played out. Like, I know that Scotty is T1. I would probably make the argument that he could be up by five even on this course, these course conditions. And his path to separation would have been a hell of a lot easier on previous Memorial Park conditions. I don't know how much David Skins we would have gotten at the top of the leaderboard. I don't know how much Nick Dunlap, Amex winner, Alejandro Tosti, Thomas Dietrich, like all these guys that are there right around what Scottie Scheffler is right now. I think a lot of those guys have benefited tremendously from these course conditions that emphasize a lot more putting and a lot more power off the tee than I think we had initially expected heading into the Houston Open. And now I am in a fantastic position financially from a DFS perspective because I didn't play Scottie Scheffler and I got a lot of 17 out of 20 in my player pool made it through this week. And a lot of the reason for that was because when you don't have a $13,000 golfer in your lineup, that provides you a lot of avenues to go a lot heavier in your lineups on guys in the sevens and the 8K range. I mean, I have lineups where Kurt Kitayama is my fourth guy in. So your roster construction totally changes based on the fact that if you decide not to play a 13K golfer, and if you are as heavy as I am on guys like Tony Finau and Stefan Jaeger heading into the week, I didn't hit on all of them, right? I had a fair amount of Thigala in there as well. Who knows? Maybe he can have a good Sunday as well. But, you know, I am in a fantastic position without Scheffler to make a lot of money fading a 50% Scheffler. And if my guys play well and even Scotty Scheffler wins, there's still a lot of avenues for me to win money without playing a 50% Scheffler, who, once again, you know, the other problem with playing a 50% golfer is that even if Scotty Scheffler wins, guess what? This is just how math works. Not even half of those people that played the 50% Scheffler, closer to 15-20% based on the prize pools. That number gets even a little bit lower when you factor in the fact that there's still going to be some very good non-Scheffler lineups that are going to win a lot of money as well. Are not going to win any money at all on the fact that you played a 50% Scheffler and that 50% Scheffler paid off. Now, with that being said, I have gained a lot of respect for Scotty Scheffler, okay, this week. I've watched him very closely, and I thought this decision this week was a very challenging one, even with the newer course conditions, and the newer course conditions put me over the edge on the fade. And also the fact that watching him play this week, I know that he may not end up winning this golf tournament. And listen, if he does win this golf tournament, you know, it's not a 1-to-1. It's not black and white. Like, if I ended up playing Scheffler, would my player pool, my lineups have changed dramatically? And maybe I wouldn't be in the position that I am in right now to have all these six of sixes. But guess what? If Scheffler wins tomorrow, or potentially even if he finishes T2, T3, I'm still going to get clipped by Scheffler six of sixes, right? There's still, if you have the winner in Scheffler, it's not like everybody who played a 50% Scheffler doesn't have six of sixes as well, right? So I'm not even sitting here saying necessarily like, hey, I did the right thing, because again, it's not even remotely black and white. But I think that we enter a really fascinating zone with Scheffler from a DFS perspective going forward, because I faded him this week. I stand by that decision based on my course research and the course conditions. But watching him play, man, like even on this golf course, and we can talk about how it pertains to Augusta, because I think that Augusta, while it doesn't have some sort of giant miss fairway penalty, I do think that it will be easier for Scheffler to separate himself from the pack on a golf course like Augusta than it even was at a golf course like Memorial Park this week. He plays such incredibly smart golf. And I talked about this earlier with Joseph Almagna in terms of the real difference between somebody like Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy. It's not as much talent as you think. Like, do I believe that just at a macro level, intrinsically, Scottie Scheffler is more talented at hitting a golf ball than Rory McIlroy is? Probably right now he's more talented, but again, like in a vacuum, I don't necessarily think that Scottie has some sort of God-given gift that a player like Rory McIlroy or a John Rahm or a Brooks Koepka or a Victor Hovland has. The advantage that Scheffler has, and this is juxtaposed so strongly with a player like Rory McIlroy, who I have continuous problems with his decision-making, is that Scheffler plays such smart golf. And it's something you've got to watch and pick up on. It's a real eye test thing. But if you actually watch a Scheffler round and think to yourself, okay, how many times is this guy missing on the right side of the hole? How many times is he leaving himself an uphill putt? How many times is he putting himself in a position where if he misses the green, he's missing on the right side of the hole? He plays in a way that makes his mistakes come so few and far between. And you even think about the two double bogeys that he made this week. One of them was he just lost focus and three-putted from 5 feet. The other one was he hit a really good wedge shot on the 15th hole today, and he misjudged the spin, and he caught a lot of spin, and it spun back into the water. And that was probably the biggest mistake that Scheffler has made all tournament. And gosh, you can even excuse that one because he was maybe 2, 3, 4 yards short of his landing spot. That would have ended up being like a pretty perfect golf shot for him. So I think we now enter the zone where, listen, whether you were part of the 50% that played Scottie Scheffler or part of the 50% that faded him, I could tell you as somebody that was part of the 50% that faded him, even if I win a lot of money this week, like I'm not walking away from this week being like, man, this is the opportunity of the century going forward to just fade Scottie Scheffler at inflated ownership. Because what he's doing right now is something I haven't seen in my time watching golf in terms of how he's been able to raise his floor to a point that, again, even if you go back and look at like the best runs that we've seen in the last decade, Rory's peak, when Spieth was at his best, when Jason Day was at his best, when John Rahm was at his best, they would still mix in the occasional. There was enough volatility in their game, particularly with a guy like Rory, based on sometimes him just getting a little too much gusto in his step and making one bad decision where he overhooks a long iron into the water and gives back a stroke or two. Gosh, you just don't see that as much with Scheffler. And this is why I will never, never, never agree with the take that caddies don't matter. I think just watching how he breaks down each shot with Ted Scott, again, juxtaposed with someone like Rory, where he's not even talking with Harry. There's no deliberation on any shots. God, the juxtaposition is so strong there with Scottie. And I think on some of these golf courses like TPC Sawgrass and Augusta is the perfect example of this as well, where Augusta is a brain course, right? Augusta is a course where it's all about missing in the right spots, and you can gain such an advantage over somebody that doesn't understand where to miss at Augusta, that doesn't know the right side of the greens, that doesn't know some of the decisions to make off the tee and some of the right sides to be in the fairways. And remember, I know Scottie Scheffler, he's it's not somebody that's played the Masters 15 times. Ted Scott has won two Masters with Bubba Watson as well. And Scheffler has won it and been great pretty much in every appearance at Augusta. Like, those are the golf courses where Scottie Scheffler's advantage is going to grow, right? Like, if we live in a universe where Scottie Scheffler is going to be 50, 60% every single week in daily fantasy, when it's a golf course like, gosh, the American Express is probably an oversimplified example, but when it's a golf course where putting is really important, there's a higher greens and regulation percentage, more variance is in play, and it's a lower miss fairway penalty, it's harder for a player like Scottie Scheffler to separate himself from a very good player, like, I'm going to be team fade 100% of the time, right? Because it's still golf at the end of the day, and we've seen, even like this week in Houston, despite the fact that Scottie Scheffler has been unquestionably the best player on the golf course this entire tournament, there are 15 guys within three strokes of him, and there's five guys tied with them, and not every single one of those guys is an amazing golfer, and, you know, who knows, he probably wins tomorrow, but there's going to be a lot of guys that are going to come close and potentially maybe even clip him. At a golf course like Augusta, that range of outcomes narrows. Okay, like at Augusta, it's going to be harder for golfers like Thomas Dietrich or David Skins to shoot the same types of scores as a Scottie Scheffler. And now I know that there's going to be a much better field at Augusta than we got at the Houston Open, and pricing, and we'll see what happens. But I mean, whether Scottie wins this tournament tomorrow, I think he probably does, or finishes, what, T2? He's, you know, his floor is too high. It's not like he's shooting 76. In a worst-case scenario, he almost wins, right? Or he finishes at least in the top five. I don't see that ownership getting any lower at Augusta because, like I said, if you played Scottie Scheffler, even if you didn't win money, I think you walked away from this week being like, I want that guy on my team going forward. You're telling me that I have to, maybe if I got the perfect, correct combo of Finau and Stefan Jaeger and a couple other guys, I would have won more money that if he faded him than if I faded him. But you're telling me I have to try and figure out that math equation every single week when you're just telling me I could sign up for an auto top five at worst every week with Scheffler. And if I can figure out some lower price guys at the bottom of the board, I'm potentially signing up for some super big money. That's kind of where we're at going forward with him, right? So, you know, I walked away from this week like very pleased and non-regretful about my decision from a process standpoint, but I am so fascinated to see how this shakes out at Augusta, because as somebody that was a lot more skeptical in, you know, this guy is him, right? It's still golf. You never know what can happen. I walked away feeling pretty solid about the floor that Scheffler is bringing to any golf tournament. Now, I'm not going to bet him at 4-1 to win the Masters, but I don't know how much I can like fault anyone for just being like, you know, the take that I am not going to bring a take into Augusta of it's over, because even on that golf course, I do not believe it's over. I believe that there's a lot that can happen at the Masters. I think there are a lot of guys outside of Scottie Scheffler that can win the Masters. With that being said, going to be fascinating to talk about in the next couple of weeks. Okay, let's do some Valero, but first let's take a quick break.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. The Valero Texas Open, one of the longest running tournaments on the PGA Tour, dates all the way back to 1922. The event is now managed by the Wasserman Media Group as of 2017. I was a former intern over there back in the day. It's always been played in the San Antonio area, and it is the sixth oldest professional golf tournament worldwide and the third oldest on the PGA Tour and the longest held in the same city. It's moved around the San Antonio area across multiple different venues, but since 2009, it has been held at the Oaks course at TPC San Antonio. In 2009, it also moved to May, and it became a regular FedEx Cup event. After moving around in the spring in 2019, it has returned to be playing the week before the Masters. So, you know, this is going to be our final tune-up for Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Ludwig Aubert, Max Homa, Colin Morikawa, Matt Fitzpatrick, Brian Harman, Hideki Matsuyama, Tom Kim, Tommy Fleetwood, amongst others. This is the last time we are going to see all of those guys. And, you know, for the Justin Thomases of the world, for the Victor Hovlands of the world, they're heading into Augusta with their last appearance under their belt. Now, 8 of the last 11 winners of the Masters warm-up weren't already in the field for the Masters. Now, the exceptions to this were J.B. Holmes, Jordan Spieth, and Corey Connors last year. So more often than not, the week before the Masters, because for many players in the field that are not already qualified, this is obviously their last opportunity to get into the Masters. 8 of the last 11 years, you have seen a guy not already qualified. This was the spot that I still hit my biggest sports bet ever, my biggest outright hit ever, JJ Spahn, 210-1. We've seen Corey Connors win at 21-1 last year. But the first year in 2019, he won at 175-1. And you got Spieth mixed in there, Andrew Landry, Kevin Chappell, Charlie Hoffman. Those are the years before before it got moved to the week before the Masters. And TPC San Antonio is the host venue. It is in San Antonio, Texas, par 72, 7,438 yards, designed by Greg Norman in 2010. Greens are 64,000 square feet on average. Bermuda with a Poa trivialis overseed. The fairways, perennial ryegrass with fescue measuring between 25 and 30 yards wide. The rough, perennial ryegrass fescue, 2 inches, 2.25 inches. Water comes into play on 3 holes. And this course is pretty difficult for the most part. It is by no means a birdie fest or a putting contest. Again, like we saw last week at Memorial Park, there are some similarities here to Augusta in terms of the skill set. The rough is very negligible, so you're not going to see some sort of giant miss fairway penalty here unless you go super offline into, you know, the desert cacti forest area, which is kind of the deal at Augusta, right? It's like the rough isn't really much of a problem, but if you drive it way offline, you could find yourself in some serious, serious trouble. There's a lot of undulation to these greens, particularly for a Greg Norman course. There are some really deep, cavernous bunkers. Again, that's kind of a Greg Norman staple. And, you know, each of the last 8 years, it's played right around middle of the pack to slightly harder and scoring difficulty. So, you know, between 2011 and 2017, the winning scores between 8 and 14 under last 4 years, outside of the Spahn year, between 15 and 20 under. And, you know, this is one of those golf courses where they water the greens a lot, and a lot of the guys are just getting better and longer. So unless we get a ton of wind, which I'll talk about later this week and in the other sorts of content and articles that I do, I think this will be sort of your mid scoring 12 to 18 under type deal, 12 to 19 under type deal. If we get some wind, probably falls closer to the 12. And if we don't get as much wind, you could see some guys come out and shoot some low numbers. We're back on a par 72 with four par fives, although these are some of the tougher par fives on the schedule. But you're not going to get – this isn't going to be some sort of super benign birdie fest. They're not going to do that to the players the week before the Masters. And I think one of the reasons why you've seen – a lot of shorter players like Spieth and Connors and Andrew Landry be able to play well here is because, you know, like I said, they water the greens, but they don't really water the fairways. The fairways play pretty firm, and they're very narrow, the fairways. But again, the rough is very negligible. It's kind of the same, very similar rough that we saw this week in Houston, where it's basically just like hitting out of the fairway. So you have these pretty narrow landing areas, but the fairways themselves or the rough themselves, this course features some of the lowest rough penalty on the entire PGA Tour, right? So it doesn't totally matter if you're not in the short grass. And like I said, it doesn't play as long as the scorecard suggests because you're still going to hit driver a ton. There's not some sort of high missed fairway penalty here. Driving distance is above tour average. And the main objective off the tee here is, you know, it's a pretty visually intimidating course off the tee, but there's not a lot of water or anything. It's really just about, hey, how can I avoid keeping myself out of the rock outcroppings, right? Like, we remember that this is the golf course that Kevin Na made a 16 at in the past, and it plays somewhat similar off the tee to a golf course like TPC Summerlin or TPC Scottsdale, where, you know, you just want to stay out. You don't have to have some sort of elite distance or some sort of elite accuracy. It's really just about avoiding the big miss, right? And so that's a very good week for us to look at a stat like good drive percentage, right? Because you just want to identify these players. They don't necessarily have to be super long or super straight. They just have to be good at avoiding the big miss. And the fairways themselves are super, super narrow, right? They're only 28 yards wide, 49.1% driving accuracy. It's got some of the lowest driving accuracy percentage on the PGA Tour, but you got to look at that missed fairway penalty and ask yourself, hey, does it even really matter if these guys are in the rough or the fairway? And the answer is no. I mean, it ranked 40th out of 45 courses in missed fairway penalty each of the last 8 years. It's ranked inside the top 15, lowest missed fairway penalty on the PGA Tour. So off the tee, like if you look at it, 9 of the top 20 lost to the field in driving distance, 10 of the top 20 lost to the field in driving accuracy, but only 2 of the top 20 lost to the field in good drive percentage. So again, not some massive benefit, not some massive correlation to being super long or super accurate. It's simply all about staying out of trouble and putting yourself in a position to hit the green in regulation. And, you know, if you look at the leaderboard, it's a really even split between short hitters and long hitters. You have Sam Stevens, Patrick Rogers, Benny on the longer side, but then you have Matt Kuchar, Corey Connors, Ches Reavy, Lee Hodges, Andrew Novak, Caden Buckley. All those guys are super short, right? Which kind of proves that this is not a bomb and gouge course, nor is it a pure accuracy course. It's just all about positioning yourself off the tee to hit the green in regulation. And then in terms of approach play, it's a very even distribution of approach shots, right? You still have a fair amount, 27% of shots come from 200 yards plus. But the thing about these par fives is they're not reachable for all players. And these are some of the toughest par fives on tour. So a lot of the shorter guys, again, like why we've seen guys like Zach Johnson and Charlie Hoffman's pretty long, but Zach Johnson and Matt Kuchar and your Hayden Buckley's and Ches Reavie and Lee Hodges be able to play well is because you got to be a really great wedge player too, because not all these guys are going to be hitting the par fives in two. And that's probably the biggest argument for why you would want distance on this course, is because you do gain a distinct advantage for hitting these tough par fives in two. And that's a real way to separate yourself on this golf course, is if you are able to score on these par fives, that's going to be a huge advantage, because not everybody is going to be able to do it, right? These are some of the toughest par fives on tour. There's certain players that two, three out of the four holes aren't even going to really have much of a real chance to reach them in two. So I'm looking at like overall approach play throughout the bag, right? And, you know, if you are a great long iron player, that's probably the biggest advantage that you can have on this golf course. But it's not like some sort of crazy long iron intensive golf course. And what was interesting about it as well was it features some of the highest plurality of approach shots from greater than 250 yards. And again, the reason for that is the par fives are really long. So one of the skills that I think you really want to look at a golf course like TPC San Antonio is, and this is a stat exclusive to the Rabbit Hole, this is something that you have the ability to look at through any time period. I threw it into my model as well. But I was looking at going for the green birdie or better percentage. And the reason why that is because, as I alluded to with the par fives, that's the way to separate yourself at TPC San Antonio. They're harder than average. There's no layup birdies because they're all fairly long. And you add in the fact that the 17th hole is a drivable par four coming down the stretch. And it's like, okay, how can we identify these guys that are really good with their fairway woods, that when they go for the green, they convert on birdies? Because you're going to have decisions on this golf course where you're going to be 255 yards out, and you're going to need to ask yourself the question, man, how much of an advantage can I gain by going for this and putting myself in a position to make birdie versus just taking my medicine, laying up, and probably, you know, making an easier par, but a little bit of a tougher birdie if you don't hit a great shot with your fairway woods, right? So that skill, those players that are able to make the right decisions, right? Like we've seen, you know, Zach Johnson famously talk about he's done this at golf courses like Augusta. He's talked about doing it at this golf course too. Like having enough strength in your wedges to know to take your medicine and that you can still make birdies with your wedges. I think, and this is one of the reasons why I know Lamagna, my friend Joseph Lamagna over at the Fried Eggs, talks about why this is a really underrated golf course. There's some real decision-making. Like these are some of the best par fives on the entire PGA Tour. And I think at the end of the week, I mean, you look at par five scoring and it's like, okay, Laird, Walker, Hoffman, Spieth, all these winners are gaining way more strokes to the field in par five scoring and leading in par five scoring the year that they win. There's some real strategy and decision-making to it. So I think, you know, some of these skills like, okay, looking at the decisions that players make on par fives, this is super in-depth rabbit hole stuff that you can only do on that website. Looking at guys who are the best wedge players, right? Looking at guys who are the best with fairway woods, looking at the guys who go for it the most, lay up the most. Like, I think those are some really interesting niche statistics that you can apply this week, but at a larger scale, because I want to spend some time talking about the players. It tests all aspects of your game. It's a very standard, well-rounded course where we're talking, you know, 12 to 18 under, depending on the wind. You're going to have a somewhat lower greens in regulation percentage, but the greenside surrounds at TPC San Antonio aren't anything crazy. It's just a lot of bunkers, right? So, like, mainly for short game stuff, I do think sand save percentage matters. I think you are going to be in a lot of bunkers on this golf course, and getting up and down from the sand is a correlated skill at this golf course. But again, you've got those overseeded Bermuda greens, and there's a lot more undulation and slope. These are larger greens than you see at the typical PGA Tour course, but they're still not anything crazy. So again, if I'm sort of dumbing down the main pillars that I want to look at this week, and I'll use this to transition us to talk about the model, can you keep the ball in play off the tee? Are you a good overall iron player coming in good form? If you're a great long iron player, that's a bonus. Are you solid around the greens and good out of the bunkers? And are you pretty good lag putter and have had some success on these overseeded Bermuda greens? Because these are on the larger side, and it's that same type of overseeded surface that we've seen the past couple of weeks. And then sort of ancillary stuff like par five scoring and going for the green birdie or better percentage, looked at the players that have played the best in Texas. But this should be like a really balanced model, I think, this week. It's a pretty standard PGA Tour course that does a pretty decent job. And again, this is why I think it's underrated. And Memorial Park had some of this going on too, where the old version of Memorial Park particularly, well, you just kind of need to be like solid at everything, right? Like, that is the best overall way to get it done here. It kind of tests all aspects of your game. You don't really want to have any glaring holes in your game, but you don't necessarily gain some massive advantage for being crazy elite at anything, right? So it's just like, you know, like I said, keep the ball in play off the tee, good overall approach player, bunker player, and par five scoring. So I threw all of this together in the model. Like I said, it was one of my more balanced models in terms of skill set, and it put out a pretty eclectic mix of players here. So let's run through the model. Okay, top 20. Number one for the first for the second week that he's playing is somehow Lucas Glover, which he was number one for me at the Valspar. That worked out great for us. 7,300 Lucas Glover finished T11 or solo 11th at the Valspar. Why does Lucas Glover have this ability to break the mold statistically? Well, he's one of the best players on the PGA Tour too. And it's the same reason why Corey Connors has played so well here and kept the ball in play and is number two in my model for that record, by the way. But what does Lucas Glover do so well? He keeps the ball in play off the tee. He's a great overall approach player, and he has a sneaky, really good short game, and he's a great long iron player, and he's great on par fives. Actually really good out of the bunkers as well. So once again, I will be continually just going to the mats with Lucas Glover. This was happening earlier in the year with Wyndham Clark, where my numbers were sort of identified. And then, of course, I hopped off after Pebble. I got my fair due from Wyndham at Pebble, but I was not on him at the API and Players, where he also finished runner-up. But kind of this earlier in the year thing that allowed me to be on Wyndham at 90-1 at Pebble, where it's like, okay, my numbers are suggesting that this guy is just doing some really important things really well for the golf courses that we have coming up. And I know he is always a threat to lose a bajillion strokes putting, but these are some easier than average greens. And like, if we were looking at a very a skill set comp for Lucas Glover, it's the golf courses that Lucas Glover, that Corey Connors plays well at, are going to be a lot of the same golf courses that Lucas Glover plays well at. And those are the top two guys in my model. It makes total sense statistically why Corey Connors continues to play well here. He keeps the ball in play off the tee. Great overall approach player. His short game's not half as good as Lucas Glover's for what it's worth, which is why I have Glover rated a little bit higher. But when, you know, there is always a path to hitting a million greens on this golf course like Corey Connors does. Number three is Hideki Matsuyama, playing some great golf right now. And I looked into a little bit. He's had a fair amount of success in weeks before majors. So this is a fantastic golf course for Hideki Matsuyama. I think it'll be fairly popular as well. I would imagine that most people running numbers and looking at models are going to trust what Hideki is doing right now more than pretty much any of the other elite players in this field. I mean, Hideki's playing just objectively better golf, maybe outside of Ludwig, who we'll talk about, is just objectively playing a lot better golf than like Spieth right now, than Rory right now, than Max Homer right now, than Colin Morikawa right now. Number four is Alex Noren. He is playing quite well for us this week. I do not think Alex Noren's going to end up winning, but you know, T15 heading into Sunday, that has that's worked out for a top 20 in a DFS play. I think Alex Noren's playing some great golf right now, and the ball striking, I know he gets known as a short game and putting guy, but Alex Noren's hitting the ball a lot better than people think, and I think there's no reason to believe that Alex Noren won't keep playing well. Andrew Novak, number five, he had a bit of a rough Saturday. From my understanding, again, he looked great for me last week. I ended up fading because he was like 15%. So I don't know what's going to happen with the Novak love this week. If a lot of people go back to that well, he did make the cut, but looks like he played pretty disappointingly on Saturday. I think based on the way he's playing, based on his iron play, this is another great spot for Novak. Aaron Rye, six. Rye, what do you know? Aaron Rye playing great this week after he was 20% the prior week at the Valspar and let everyone down. If you had the balls to stay on Aaron Rye for one more week at Houston, I did not. I was not on him either weeks, but I didn't even have the foresight to be like, man, why did everybody love him last week? This is another good golf course for him. Aaron Rye's playing great, and I would imagine that this is another great golf course for him. He'll be popular. Seven, Harmon. Eight, Spieth. Nine, Homa. It's an interesting little three there of Harmon, Spieth, Homa. And Spieth, I have no idea. I really have no idea with this guy. I know that he's won at this golf course before. He's been like the best player in this field in Texas over the last 5 years. We're getting into master zone where, you know, this is his Super Bowl, right? Augusta is always such a comfortable spot for him. And you would expect that this is like right now is when Jordan Spieth should be peaking, and it feels anything but. Kind of similar disappointment with Homa, right? Like I have not had much interest in playing Homa at all this year. His irons have not been great. His driver has not been great. His ball striking has not looked strong whatsoever. So we'll see how he looks this week, in his prep before the Masters, which is kind of the next step for Homa. I think it's kind of put up or shut up time for Homa going forward at these majors compared to the other great players, the other proverbial top 20 guys in the world. Homa, I know he started to turn it around a little bit last year, but he's still been of the better players, one of the biggest underperformers in majors and, you know, of the guys doing it right now. Bezuidenhout, 10. He's playing great. Horschel, 11. Hubbard, 12. He's been great for me this week. Eric Cole, Brendan Todd, Doug Gim, Ludwig Aubert, Keith Mitchell, Benny Ahn, Taylor Montgomery, Troy Merritt. Some interesting names in there that I think you could get a lot of value on. I'll tell you the guy that I think is, this would be my first bet on Monday morning, or on Monday morning. We'll see what the ownership comes in at in DFS. I wonder if, you know, I talk about him a lot, and a lot of people have sort of the same opinion on this as me, is this guy ends up being a super popular play, although I'm not quite sure. Ludwig Aubert, I think, is going to win this week. Now, I'll make the case why I think Ludwig's going to win this week. For guys like Morikawa and Jordan Spieth and even Matt Fitzpatrick and Hideki Matsuyama and Max Homa and Brian Harmon, this is all about fine-tuning in your final week before Augusta. If you've been to Augusta and played in the Masters, you know how crazy and singular of a week that is. And just like in all sports, like just that classic look-ahead spot of like, you know what's coming next week. Are you really able to focus on the task at hand? Now, the answer for a lot of these great players is yes. Okay, we've seen Spieth win the week before majors. We've seen Hideki play great the week before majors. But the fact that it's almost like an ignorance is bliss thing with Ludwig. It's like he doesn't know what that drive into Magnolia Lane is like. He doesn't know how crazy that week is. You could maybe view this in the opposite of like, maybe he's so nervous and excited for the Masters that he completely takes his foot off the gas this week looking ahead. But to me, something about the fact that like Ludwig's never done the whole Augusta thing has me feeling he's going to view this week a bit more singularly. He's going to view it. He's going to be able to stay in the present a little bit more and focus a lot more on the task at hand this week, as opposed to knowing what's coming next week at Augusta. And that was a very anecdotal, non-quantifiable reason why I like Ludwig this week compared to the other elites, based on the fact that, again, that ignorance is bliss thing. Like he doesn't know what's coming next week at Augusta. So it might be easier for him to just come out guns a-blazing and win on the PGA Tour, something I know that he wants to do and play, and he's been playing incredible golf, and I know he won in the fall swing, but not a lot of people were paying attention to golf in the fall swing, so I still feel like we haven't gotten a real in-season coming out party for Ludwig yet. I think like if he got 18 more holes at Pebble Beach, he would have had a really good shot to win that thing in front of a lot of people and really get himself on the map. And I do not necessarily believe that winning the Valero Texas Open is going to put him on the map of like golf fans at large. I just love this spot for him. I gave you a bunch of unquantifiable anecdotal reasons why I like Ludwig from a golf course perspective. I as a phenomenal golf course for Ludwig, right? Ludwig is an amazing driver of the ball. He is long and straight. He keeps the ball in play off the tee, and he is so long that he will be able to gain an advantage with his driver this week. He will be able to hit those par fives and two. He will be able to reach that par four 17th hole. He is rapidly developing. The irons were a bit of a concern when he first came out onto the PGA Tour. Those concerns have been quelled by me significantly. He's been a phenomenal iron player this year. He's been a phenomenal iron player from 200 yards plus. The wedges still need a little bit of work, but again, like his distance, I think, will be so overwhelming on this golf course, combined with the overall approach play. And he's actually got a really underrated short game as well. Like Ludwig's chipping this year has been vastly improved. Because he's still so young. So I don't even know what we'd be comparing it to, but it's just good. It's just not something that gets talked about as much. And Ludwig's got a good short game. He's been a pretty good putter this year as well. He's already had some success on these overseeded Bermuda greens. He went to Texas Tech. Like he's played a lot of golf in Texas. He played this golf course as a baby in 2022. I think while he was still in college and he missed the cut, but at least he's seen it before, right? And this is actually his return to first time playing back in Texas again as a pro. Probably have some good vibes as well coming back to the state that he played a lot of golf in and in college. And I like the fact that he's seen this golf course before. He's coming off an eighth at the Players where he gained four off the tee, 5.8 on approach, 2.5 around the green. Like Ludwig was unbelievable at TPC Sawgrass, and he had never seen that golf course before. And that was a strategic golf course that required a lot of decision making, required you to keep the ball in play off the tee, overseeded Bermuda greens, like some tricky bunker shots, some tricky around the green shots. And he just smashed without even seeing it before ever. And now in seven starts this year, he's made every single cut, five straight top 25 finishes in a row. He's coming off the best ball striking performance at the Players of the season. I just think that he's a great overall fit for this golf course. And I'm in. I think he wins this week. I think we get the Ludwig steam engine heading into Augusta. I think that it's going to be I don't think that he is like Scotty Scheffler level right now or anything like that. And I think it's tremendously hard to win the Masters on your first appearance. We haven't seen that since Fuzzy Zeller. But I think this is a week where Ludwig kind of announces himself as like, hey, I know that Scheffler is the thing that we're most excited about, but don't forget about me. I just trust the state of his game from what I saw at the Players so much more than like any other of the elite players outside of like Hideki right now. And I also think the fact that he's just never done this before and is not going to be so hyper-focused on how crazy of a week it is next week that I think it's just going to allow him to stay a lot more present and just go out and win this golf tournament. From a talent standpoint, I'd argue he's right up there with the best player in the field, if you know, one of the best players in the field. Just in terms of how they're playing right now, I'd take Ludwig's talent over anyone. So I don't know what the odds will be. Hopefully they're not super low, but I think Ludwig's your winner. I feel pretty strongly about that. Ludwig and Glover are the two guys I know that I'm absolutely going to bet when odds drop on Monday morning. And then, like I said, really fascinated to see how some of these guys look this week. Like, I think Augusta is underratedly a really great golf course for somebody like Colin Morikawa. But it is so, and obviously Rory, like I'm pretty curious to watch how Rory performs this week. My numbers don't love Rory this week. He can get a little bit loose with the driver, and the irons have not been great. Rory, of course, can be course proof, but this is a spot where I'm going to wait and see a little bit and hope that he proves me wrong in not playing him and we see some signs of life or not. Right. You know, or Rory looks terrible and you get super low owned Rory at the Masters because everybody thinks he sucks. And that's just as dangerous for me as well. But I'm fascinated to watch Rory. I'm fascinated to watch Spieth. I'm fascinated to watch Morikawa. I'm fascinated to watch Hideki, who there's a lot of buzz building around Hideki at the Masters. But just watching Scheffler this week, it just feels like so many things would have to go right for a guy like Colin Morikawa or even Rory, as much as it pains me to say this, to beat him over 72 holes right now. And I think that is why we're going to have a great Masters this year. I think we have a situation where in this goes back into the arguments I've made before about how greatness and dominance is good for ratings and good for sports. But as somebody, trust me, that has been provided a lot of pushback on the, let's just pump the brakes a little bit with Scheffler. Man, I watched him this week and it's tried to watch him closely to be like, cause I know this is the last time that we were going to see him before the Masters. And you know, I'm going to the Masters this year. The Masters is the biggest content week of the year for me. I got Rom at the Masters right last year. So, I really care about nailing the Masters. And so if I'm just going to step in front of Scheffler in the betting markets and in DFS, I just really wanted to make sure what I was getting into. And again, like I said, I have some avenues to make a lot of money this week on the fade, but man, like the only reason for that is because I got a lot of other things right. I got a lot of other things right. And again, do you want to count on that going forward? Do you really want to take the chance that, hey, okay, I know, yes, if I play Scottie Scheffler, the odds are not in my favor that I'm going to win, but also if I play him and I get the other things right, I'm basically signing up for, you know, a T5 at worst out of him versus trying to get all of these other things to happen and hoping for chaos. It's a tough one going forward with him. So I'm excited to watch this week. Hopefully Rory shows us something. Hopefully Ludwig wins. That will do it for me. I will be back on this podcast feed on Monday talking a lot more about the Valero Texas Open, a lot more about the Masters with my good buddy Twitterless Steve. Great to check in with him around Masters time. We did an early Masters preview in December. Talked a lot about Scheffler on that podcast, and I think we're only feeling more excited to deliberate on how things are going to shake out at Augusta in a couple of weeks. But again, still a ton of money to be made this week at Valero. I really think Ludwig is your winner. Ludwig or Lucas Glover is going to be in the mix there as well, my guy. So that will do it for me. Best of luck with your bets this weekend on Sunday at the Houston Open. Hopefully Stefan Jaeger can track down Scottie Scheffler tomorrow and hit us a nice 50-1 ticket, but I certainly would not count on that. And happy Easter. Enjoy Easter to all who celebrate, and we will be back on this podcast feed in a couple of days. Cheers.